This is Line Break, where we deconstruct poetry written by young writers and discuss inspiration and intention behind their poems. Take a pause and enjoy the line breaks. Here's episode 30, part 2, where Amaryllis and I share poems that we wrote based off of each other's lines. My poem is based on the line that Amaryllis wrote, and hers is based on the line that I wrote. I hope you enjoy this very special episode of Line Break, and thank you all at YWP so much for supporting Line Break and allowing me to create over 30 episodes. I'm so grateful, and I can't wait to see what comes next. Without further ado, here is episode 30, part 2. Hi, I'm Isa Virus on YWP, and this is my poem, January. Periwinkle skies in the middle of the night, the inelegant purr of my typewriter. Lucid dreams, I'm aware of a complete numbness in my body that I mistake for loneliness. I only throw pennies in pairs. 17 years of tossing salt over my shoulder never blinded any demons. I want to crack open pistachios while the world orbits around me. The earth itself is sometimes poetry. Cacao powder, dried flowers pressed into books with gilded pages. Spilled espresso makes ink beads that spread out on homemade paper like a ripple in the water. I walked on the frozen lake a few years ago, looked below my feet at times suspended in midair, wondered how I got to where I was. I am in 1,000 memories in 1 second, pink hair ties sand between my toes, all the different heavens. Count to 100 because I'm waiting to be found. What does it mean to be in love? I gather pennies by the handful and stuff them greedily into empty pomegranate bodies. Thank you. It's so weird to be on the other side of this. So it was inspired by the line that you wrote, which is, I only throw pennies in pairs. And then that made me think of like superstitions and like throwing salt over your shoulder is supposed to blind demons. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I also read this article in Harper's Magazine, which has like politics and writing and culture and just like all sorts of stuff about Zuhitsu writing, which is like a Japanese writing style where you have like these loosely connected personal stories with like lists and imagery and stuff just kind of all mixed together. And it's very like random, but it's really cool. And it's kind of like a collage made out of words and images and stuff. So that was what I was going for. And it was basically just all these little thoughts I had going on in my mind that I put together.
Well, I think you achieved what you sought out to do. Like, it's like connected, but it's disjointed in like a really cool sense. Okay, so I guess the first question I had, I'll go in chronological order. But your line, a complete numbness in my body that I mistake for loneliness. It's beautiful, really. It's kind of like one of those lines that like says something I already knew but never articulated. What was the inspiration for that?
This is so funny for me because it's like, oh, you're like me. It's like being on the other side of it. Anyway, the inspiration for that is actually kind of interesting because I have been having a lot of lucid dreams lately where like I'm aware that I'm dreaming. And so I had this dream and I was like, oh, I'm dreaming and I'm like completely numb. And like I moved, but I couldn't feel the movement. And I was talking, but I couldn't feel like the sensation of talking. And I just thought it was really interesting. So I wanted to put it into the poem somehow. And originally I just had like lucid dream, I'm numb, loneliness. And then I was like, well, how can I sort of connect it, but not completely? Which I feel like is kind of the whole theme for the poem is like sort of connecting it, but not really.
Yeah. You mentioned how you extrapolated from my line, I only throw pennies in pairs. So what do you think pennies mean in this poem?
That's very interesting because I did bring back the pennies in the end. And I don't know. I think it was just kind of like wanting to have luck and good things happen, but knowing that you don't always believe in that kind of thing. You know, like the whole thing with pennies is that you're making a wish and you're believing and having faith that like something good is going to happen in the end. And I was like, I don't know. I mean, I've been tossing salt over my shoulder and like doing all these superstitious things for however long I've been alive and nothing good has ever really happened to me in a sense. So that's what I was kind of going for, just like putting a lot of meaning into the pennies.
Yeah, that's really cool. I personally am like kind of superstitious. Like I have my lucky shirts and I throw pennies sometimes. Would you say you are superstitious or does the poem kind of reflect how, or you're starting to doubt it, that kind of thing?
See, I don't know because I do throw pennies a lot and I do make wishes when I have an eyelash like on my face or whatever, but I'm not like, oh, I won't ever step on the sidewalk crack. If I see a black cat, that's kind of weird or whatever. And I don't really have like lucky clothes or anything like that. But I do sort of believe in it. Not completely. I doubt it a little bit.
The ones like, if it works, it works. That's great. If not.
Yeah. I mean, if it works in my favor, yes, I totally believe in it. If it doesn't, then no, it's a hoax.
And then the earth itself is sometimes poetry.
Ooh, yeah, I don't really know where that came from. I was talking about something about the orbit, and then that made me think of Earth. And this is interesting. This was going to be in the poem, but I took it out because I was like, that doesn't fit my aesthetic or whatever. But I was listening to the podcast that John Green and Hank Green have, and they're both authors now, actually, but I haven't read any of Hank's books yet, just because I don't want to hate them and then not like any of John's books by like association. But anyway, I was listening to their podcast, Dear Hank and John, and they were talking about how like when the asteroids hit Earth and like the dinosaurs went extinct, it could have been, or it was, I can't remember what they said, enough force to blow the dinosaurs into space. So there could be fossils in like space just orbiting around the Earth. And I was like, that's really interesting. And I was like, that's kind of like poetry, just like something completely random, but like amazing.
Yeah. When you said that, I was imagining space dinosaurs.
I know. And then they said that there could be like dinosaur bones on like Mars or whatever. And I was like, what? On another planet? That's crazy. Just like the whole idea is so wacky.
And I think it's so cool how after that you transitioned into cacao powder. Like, it seems kind of random, but like it really works, I guess, with like the imagery of dirt and then cacao powder, maybe. I don't know.
See, I didn't even like pick that up, but the cool thing about this whole Zuzitsu thing is that like the reader picks up a lot more than the writer does, and so you're kind of forced to make connections based on your experiences too. So in a way, it's really personal while being really like not personal, I guess. But anyway, yeah, the cacao powder and all the kind of food things just came from things I've been eating recently and just kind of like almost a grocery list in a way of things that I want to get more of. So like the pistachios and the cacao powder, the espresso and stuff like that. And I think I said something about ink beads of espresso. And that was because I was watching a video on the Ars Poetica YouTube channel and there is a poem that mentioned ink beads and I was like, that's really cool. I want to do that, but of like something that isn't ink.
It's like really gorgeous imagery. So I was going to ask if it was based on like real experience or like your mind's eye kind of thing.
Yeah, it's really just like a lot of my writing is just me seeing or hearing something and thinking, but what if it's made of something else? But what if it's like seen in a different way? But what if it's the middle of the night? And lately my main thing has been like, but what if it's underwater? I don't know why, but like half of my poems have been about like being underwater lately, and a lot of them are like love poems, and they're not about a specific person. Actually, I Want the Ocean, which I think was my latest one, was very much inspired by Conch Shells, which was an earlier one, which in turn was inspired by me cleaning my room and finding a seashell wondering what the name of the shells were, where like you hold it to your face and you can like hear the ocean going like shh in the background. So I was like, oh, what are those called? And they're conch shells. And I was like, oh, I'll make a poem out of it. So it's really just that, and not me being like, I love this person so much, let's just be together and do water. A lot of it's just like me thinking it sounds cool.
Yeah, I definitely noticed in my own writing, like I guess a few months ago, that especially when I'm describing COVID, I would describe myself drowning a lot. So I'm actually working on a poem right now where the first line is, I love drowning in metaphor. Which, yeah, the idea of drowning, I think it's such a cool way to describe like slow motion, but at the same time, kind of numb.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you mentioned you're writing about COVID and stuff, I was going to ask you, since we first recorded our podcast episode back in May, which is like forever ago, how do you think your writing has changed since then?
Well, I can't actually tell if it's gotten better or worse. I'd like to think it's gotten better. But honestly, I think like before I was a lot more straightforward in what my purpose was and what I was trying to convey. Now, like after, like, I guess it's because I admire people's imagery so much and I was trying to emulate that kind of style. So now I just have like a lot of really amazing images that I kind of like flop together and they don't make all that much sense. Yeah. I think right now, though, what I'm doing, well, what I'm trying to emulate, I think it's cool right now, but maybe later I'll think it's really stupid. But I tried to pull, like, scientific theory stuff for math. Yeah, because I just, like, I love the idea of combining poetry with, like, STEM-related subjects.
Yeah, I've noticed that in your writing, and I think it's really interesting, cool, because it's kind of like a weird juxtaposition, but it's really funky and really cool together.
So maybe that means it's good. I don't know.
I think so. I mean, it's cool. Definitely, it's going to be interesting to see when you're, like, older, once you've, like, kind of phased out of that, to see, like, do you like it then, or do you find it cringy? Because I feel like half of the poetry I wrote that I thought was so cool at the time, now I'm like, oh, no, 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 no.
For sure. There's some pieces on YWP I wish I could take down. So in a way, it's kind of a blessing that I can't take it down, because I would, like, end up with nothing left. But
yeah, I used to be really into writing about, like, really dark, disturbing things when I was, like, 12 and 13. And then I kind of phased out of that. But at the time, I was like, this is so metaphorical. This is so cool. People are going to just be in awe of my writing. And I'm like, no, no, that's too much. Don't do that.
Yeah, I think I'm also kind of in that kind of period where after I try to go back and edit and I'm trying to find a point, I end up with, like, a really dark point. And my mom read my poetry recently and she's like, Audrey, like, you seem really happy, but I'm worried about you after reading this.
Oh my gosh.
And some of it, I feel like it's, like, there's this piece that I came up with, and I was just kind of mad at my English textbook because for whatever reason, the publisher decided to put in parentheses after each poetry piece, like, poetry after each one. And I was like, don't you know that's, like, going to deter high schoolers from reading it? Like, I was kind of upset with them. And then somehow I made it sound so pretentious when I went back to edit it. Yeah.
I know. A lot of mine was so pretentious. It's like, I thought I was in college. And now that I, like, sort of am, I'm like, no, no, just don't. Iris. Oh.
Okay, I think back to the poem.
Right. It's so funny to hear you do that because it's like me, but it's not.
Okay, so you mentioned there are gilded pages. And I guess it's kind of because I'm studying in APUSH right now, and we're going over the Gilded Age, which is called the Gilded Age because it's, like, gold-leafed, but then it's, like, rotten in the inside. Is that the connotation you wanted to give it, or were just imagining, like, gold-leafed pages?
Very interesting, because that's a hidden meaning I did not know about. Honestly, it was just, like, dried flowers and pages at first, and then I was, like, in a book, and I was like, well, what kind of book? And that's my writing process right there. It's just me thinking of something and being like, well, what kind? What kind? And then what does it look like? And then what does it smell like? And just, like, asking myself all these questions. But anyway, I chose a gilded book because I have some antique books, like, on a separate shelf from my other books because they're so special. And a lot of them have gilded pages. And I was just looking at them and I was like, it's so pretty. Like, all that gold, all that sparkly stuff. That was really just it, just wanting it to be sort of, like, an aesthetic. And I don't really like to use the word aesthetic because it sounds so, like, Gen Z. But anyway, that, like, aesthetic of, like, coffee and books with gilded pages and, like, literature, like, dark academia. I've been saying dark academia so much for the past, like, 5 months, but that's sort of what I was going for.
Okay, that's, like, really cool. I don't think I've ever read a book with gilded pages. Like, I've read a book with purple pages, but for some reason, I've never read a book with gilded pages.
I know. I don't even touch them. I just, like, stare at them, and I'm like, wow, look at all that gold.
Yeah, and I think it was this whole stanza that I walked on the frozen lake a few years ago, looked below my feet at time suspended in midair, and wondered how I got to where I was. Which is personally my favorite stanza of the entire thing because it captures the feeling perfectly. But I was wondering what kind of inspired that aesthetic.
I'm so glad that you like it. Honestly, that was just when I first came to Vermont from Florida, I was wearing, like, a hoodie and it was, like, 0 degrees out. And we went to the waterfront in Burlington where you can climb down some rocks and then walk on the lake when it's frozen over. And there are all these people around us, like some of them were skating, some of them are just like walking with sneakers all over the frozen lake. And I was like, this is so surreal and just so crazy to come from like Florida where it's 80 degrees in December. And like, here I am standing on a frozen lake. And I just thought that was so interesting. And just like, I feel like a lot of times in my life, I'm just wondering how I got to where I was. Like these crazy things happen to me and I'm like, how did I get here? Like, how did this all happen? And so, yeah, that was mainly just that.
It kind of gave me like the lake itself gave me, I don't know if you read this book, it's called 5 Feet Apart. They made a movie based off.
Yeah, with Cole Sprouse, I think.
Yeah, the one where, I don't know, if, wait, have you read the book? I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah, I read it. I didn't watch the movie, but I read the book.
Okay, so it reminded me of that scene on the lake where, like, the ice is too thin or whatever. Like, it just, it was, like, a sense of panic, but also a sense of calm. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was like when I was on the lake because, I mean, I was told, like, my whole life by my parents, like, oh, the lake is fine. When we go to Vermont, you're going to walk on the lake. It's going to be great. You're not going to fall. And people drive on it. And, like, you see cars coming past, like, just completely driving on the lake and they're fine. But I still had this like intense dread that like, what if the ice breaks only where I'm standing and for no one else? And I'm the only one who falls in and no one can catch me. So like, I was definitely freaking out a little bit, but I was also just really like kind of peaceful because we were standing like almost in the middle of it, just like halfway between the land and like New York. And it was just so crazy because it's like, we can only do this for a few weeks out of the year and then it becomes impossible unless we want to like drown. So it was pretty crazy.
Yeah, I guess I was just kind of shocked that people drive on the lake. Maybe this is just like pop culture and like something bad always happens on frozen lakes, like people drown and stuff, like in books and stuff. Maybe that's why. I don't know. That sounds dangerous.
Vermont do be weird. I mean, there's like, I don't know, 500,000 of us, and apparently we all think it's a good idea to drive on a frozen lake. So, I mean, as long as there's, like, 6 inches of ice, that's all it takes and stuff, and it's like, how can you do that? Why?
And then, like, right after that, you're like, I am 1,000 memories in 1 second, which that line was probably the line of the piece that resonated with me the most, because I've been trying to say this, a culmination of all my memories, but you did it so well here, and it was kind of like offhand, like very effortless. So yeah, brilliant job with that line.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that was kind of what I was trying to get at with like just thinking about all these things that have happened in my life like at the same time, because it's like I was thinking about the frozen lake and then I was thinking about like being at the beach, which is how I tied in the next line, which is about like pink hair ties and sand between my toes. And then that got me thinking about like shark teeth, and that got me thinking of a yard sale I went to where I found shark teeth, and that got me thinking of like all these other things. So it's like within the span of 1 second I have like all these memories and these places I've been just like rotating in my mind, and it's really interesting.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, and then my last note-ish was, is the pomegranate, like, in the last line, a reference to, like, the Hades and Persephone story?
I didn't even think about that, but it could be. No, honestly, it was just me wanting to bring back the pennies from before, and actually the line before that, which was, what does it mean to be in love, I think. I just wanted to put a random question, and I was, like, something really, like, that has a lot of potential answers, and I'll just put it in. I'll let the reader decide what it means. But anyway, I wanted to bring back the pennies, and I was like, okay, I'll have my pennies that I'm trying to, like, get together. And I was like, I'm not going to put them in a bowl. I want to put them somewhere weird. So I was like, okay, I'll put it in a pomegranate. And then I was like, no, it's got to be eerie, empty pomegranate bodies. So that's what I went with. Just wanting to, like, have the pennies in a weird place. And just, like, something kind of unexpected at the end.
That is so cool. I read that differently because I thought it was a reference to like Hades and Persephone. So I was like, oh my gosh, the bodies are dead.
No, it's not that deep. I mean, I'm glad that you think it's that deep. And no, it's just me trying to be weird.
I love how succinct this poem is, I think, too. And then how like, after all that, you go back to the title and it's called January.
Yeah, that was going to be part of the first line. I was going to be like, January, periwinkle skies, and just make it like a list. And I was like, actually, this happens a lot with my poetry. If there's like a first line that I sort of like, I'll just end up making it the title. So I was like, that would be cool to just make it January.
Yeah, I learned about doing that like when I was first starting to write, because one of the first workshops I ever went to was this organization called Write Girl. And they held like this huge songwriting workshop at the Huntington Library. And basically the thing that I had come up with that I decided would be the cool thing about my song, which ended up being really bad. But I was going to make the title my first line so that like it could be read that way. Because I mean, usually when you read it, you read the title first and then you read the rest of the poem. And yet your first line and your title definitely work that way in this poem, especially since there's a period at the end of January.
I know, I went for that. I was like, oh, this would be so cool. But anyway, yeah, I do that a lot actually, because I figure if I'm going to be reading the title first, then it should almost blend seamlessly together. And another thing I don't like to do with my titles is have it like as something else I say within the poem, because I feel like that's kind of giving it away. Although I have done that sometimes, but I'm not into it right now. It could become something I'm really into in a little bit though. But anyway, yeah, just something that blends seamlessly from like the title into the poem. And it's not like this is very obviously the title of it. And this is very obviously the poem. Like it could just be one endless thought.
Yeah, that's really cool. I haven't done it in a really long time, because normally now I either go for, right now my thing is super long titles. It started with short titles, but then I found all my short titles because I feel like there's already poems with short titles and there's probably a much more better poem with the title I give it. So I was like, I should give it a long title no one else will have.
I like that though, because then it's like very close to who you are and like very personal, which is really cool. So moving on to your poem. Now I'm going to take over as my usual role. So your poem.
Okay. Hi. My username on What I Did BP is Amaryllis, and this is my poem, Hallowed Halos, Hallowed Be Thy Name. I don't know if I believe in angels anymore. I poured Cupid into paper wings, and when the origami butterfly didn't fly, I gathered rainwater from my eyes and tucked heaven's silence into my ribs. But iron metastasizes. My blood now cries pearls for the fallen angel, risen cynic, an odd metalloid of child and higher being. I metamorphose subconsciously, and the half of me that is my mother's hair and cheekbones tuck away my soft parts in fear that I will metabolize them and self-destruct, utterly alone. She needn't have worried. Flyaway hairs are cherubs that hold their bowed promises to baby skin, powdered sugar that tastes like superfluous nothing. So I will still have my brownie, if only in teenage defiance. I imagine my ancestors' blood trembling beneath my skin, graveyards roiling as they look down in disappointment, clutching their paper money and incense tangerines. I run dizzy, going outside myself while trying to be present, because I am afraid of only knowing life from afar, of painting waltzes I will never dance, of becoming an eager sacrifice for people who don't care to know my face. Reflected my stream of consciousness, a ribbon mirror in which I split reality into ripples that will never lead to anything but dead flowers and a shriveled aisle of petals long gone. There's an old riddle with legs of 4 and 2 and 3, and though obsessions with underground music are futile, I excuse myself because some boxes aren't worth losing myself in. It is all I can do to put warmth in their crinkled eyes, a small lift in the edges of their lips, lies, liars, lying still. I look over my shoulder and there is no one. I used to want to write a memoir because it would mean I had a life worth reading. Would a teenage girl look up to smile at a wall, eyes shining with lamplight, screaming in all the silent ways one does when they see themselves articulated perfectly in poetic prose? But now that I finally have stories to tell, I gather them haphazardly to my chest and feel a vague sense of loss as they silently waterfall from my overflowing arms to the abyss, making each leaflet more precious by the second. I will forget, and I do not know yet if how to forget gracefully. I tell myself I like the way my brain is, cluttered and disorganized, like my bedroom and my desk and my life. I am complacent in my sheets, but it is a rainy day and nonograms, which a notes app apparently cannot fathom at this moment, make more sense than God. People spend lifetimes folding experiences into paper, into abstract sculptures of origami and nonsense. I don't know if I believe in angels anymore, but when I become drunk on the night hiding from starlight, I really wish I did, because I don't know if I like being a skeptic anymore either.
Ooh, thank you so much. Oh, I love this. It's so cool. So many lines, so many things is amazing. So mine was based on your line, I only throw pennies in pairs. And yours was based on my line,
I don't know if I believe in angels anymore. The second one, I kind of forgot the exact wording of it. It was like my ancestors looked down at me in disappointment-esque kind of thing. And then the last one was, I used to want to write a memoir, but now that I finally have stories to tell, I don't know if it's such a good idea anymore. Sorry, I forgot
that. That was it. So besides that, what was your inspiration for this?
Honestly, like, I wrote this like in the morning when I went to my mom's room, and I had intended to watch Netflix with her, but my brother came in and they started talking. I was like, oh, it'd be a good time to do this. And then I guess I was simultaneously feeding off like and injecting into their conversation while writing this, which is why it kind of jumps around a lot, especially between my chunks, like, that are stanzas that was kind of my inspiration, I guess. It was more like stream of conscious, I guess.
Yeah, and what were you thinking about as you wrote this? Like, what sort of main images and themes did you want to portray?
There weren't really images, like, throughout the entire thing. Like, they were random images, like the wine, the cherubs that hold their bow promises to baby skin, powdered sugar that tastes like superfluous nothing. I was trying to go from, like, the angelic, like, cherub, and then babies made me think of, like, baby powder, which led me to powdered sugar, which led me to brownies. And then the next image, I think, was, like, going outside myself while trying to be present. I worry about this a lot, actually, like, documenting stuff but not having proof that I'm actually there or, like, not experiencing it. And I think the last one, one of them was, like, just the Mulan thing that came with the ancestors' disappointment kind of thing. I was trying to do that in the reflection part-ish. And then the nanograms in my bedroom on a rainy day.
Oh, I love that Mulan part. I was like, oh, that's so cool. And I really love all of this. I was like, wow, this is so cool. I mean, I give you three lines and you just go like, wow. So anyway, I poured Cupid into paper wings, and when the origami butterfly didn't fly, I gathered rainwater from my eyes and tucked heaven's silence into my ribs. What was your inspiration for that? Because I was like, this is just gorgeous.
Yeah, I think, like, angels made me think of Cupid and wings. And for some reason, I imagined doing origami in my sister's room, even though I've never done origami in there. For some reason, that was the setting for this. And then the rainwater from my eyes, that came about in the editing phases, I think, because originally it was I gathered disappointment from my eyes and tucked it into my ribs. And then through the editing process, it eventually became what it is.
So did a lot of this change in the editing process, or do you find that you just kind of swapped out a few words here and there?
Actually, that's a kind of neat question, especially for this piece. Because when I first wrote it, it didn't really have a point. Like, I sent it to, like, my mentor and a few of my friends, and they're like, it's really pretty, but we have no idea what it means. So I think a lot of my editing process was trying to arrange it so that it had a point. But, like, the general, I guess, the foundation of it stayed the same. Like, a lot of the lines stayed the same. I just tried to edit it for a little more clarity, I guess, so you're not just reading gibberish.
Yeah, I find that a lot with mine, too, is that half of it is just swapping out the words, and the other half is trying to, like, sort of arrange it to make sense. So it's, like, it doesn't have to be completely like, this is what happened, and then this is what happened, and then this is what happened, you know, like a book. But, like, just enough so it's not, you know, a mess, and it's not just, like, how did you go from there to there? Like, there's sort of a connecting thought.
Yeah, because I have my brother, he's a songwriter, which is like a very different medium of writing. And for him, he's much more straightforward in his writing because you kind of have to be with songs, and no one's going to get it. It's kind of like songs, you hear it, so you have to make it more straightforward so people understand it. With poetry, they can go back and like reread it. I had him read it, and he didn't like it all that much because some of the imagery he felt was problematic. He was like, this doesn't make any sense to...
Well, that's so interesting because I took a songwriting workshop last summer online, and the instructor was talking about how with songs, like, you kind of have to use simple language because, like, in poetry, a lot of us were poets and none of us had really written any songs before. And she was saying with poetry, you can be as beautiful with the language as you want. And then with songs, you have to sort of dumb it down a little bit so that people can, like, wanna, you know, sing it and, like, listen to it and stuff. And so it was weird because I transformed one of my poems, or translated, I guess, one of my poems into a song. And I was like, this is such a good song. It's so cool. And she was like, I don't think anyone's going to want to sing this. They're too big words. You have to make it simpler. In the end, it was really cool to see how I kind of moved it from a very poetic thing to a very, like, song thing.
Yeah, that's so cool. I tried to do that with one of my poems once, and it didn't work out. So now, like, if I want to try to write a song, which I haven't yet, I have, like, bits and pieces. Then I have to actually sit down and be like, I want to write a song. Because if not, it's just going to be a poetic mess.
Yeah. So, some more lines. I metamorphose subconsciously, so I will still have my brownie if only in teenage defiance. I imagine my ancestors' blood trembling beneath my skin, graveyards whirling as I look down in disappointment, clutching their paper money and incense tangerines. And I thought that was just so cool. Like, all these different images are so cool, and how they're like, yeah, you know, sort of connected, but like, you kind of, the reader has to make the connection, which I think is so cool how both of our poems have that, where it's like, it's up to the reader to make that connection between thought and thought.
Yeah, that hadn't really even occurred to me, I don't think, either. it was separate in my head because metamorphose came about because I was trying to, there's this thing lately, I kind of did it in the tile where it's like, hallowed halos, hollow be thy name. So I'm trying to find words that have the same beginning-ish, like kind of like alliteration, but like a little further into the word, I guess. So I guess the repetition I was trying to go for was like metastasizing. Metamorphosizing, and there's one more, I just don't remember where it was. And so that's what I had in mind when I wrote it, and I hadn't even considered like it connecting with the brownie, which I added like just now, an hour ago. And then the ancestors, that was kind of there already, and it was like built in.
Yeah, and what's cool about the ancestors was that I'm pretty sure that came from one of my lines that I gave you. And the other half of my line, which I didn't give to you because I thought it was too specific, was like them being angry that I'm 1/16 further away from where they stand on burnt orange soil. Because my grandma's family was from Canada, from a Native American reservation. And so I was kind of thinking about like these Native American tribes looking at me with like all my technology and my like complete disconnect from like the natural world. And yeah, that's what I was thinking about. But it's so cool how you took it and just completely used it with your background.
Yeah. The paper money and incense tangerines, because we have this thing in Chinese culture. It always happens around Easter, and it's kind of like Dia de los Muertos. And basically we burn paper money for them because the idea is like as it goes up, it'll transform into real money for them. And then the incense tangerines was because at my grandma's house, like right when you walk in, there's this Dizigong, like, which is kind of like god of the house, I guess, like on the floor, and it's next to my grandparents' like plaques. And we do incense and tangerines to them for them to like eat. That's the idea.
That's really, really cool. I like it. And some more lines. I run dizzy, going outside myself while trying to be present because I'm afraid of only knowing life from afar. Of painting waltzes I will never dance, of becoming an eager sacrifice for people who don't care to know my name, reflecting my stream of consciousness, a ribbon mirror in which I split reality into ripples that will never lead to anything but dead flowers in a shriveled aisle of petals long gone. What was your inspiration for that section?
Okay, so what I had before didn't make all that sense. But my first image there, I debated in my head a lot. I guess the balance between living and then also trying to capture life, like that kind of idea, I guess. And originally it was like photographers, being the photographer but not being in the picture. And then that's when my brother came in. He's like, well, you can do a selfie. I was like, okay, good point. So then I had to do like a lot of work on. And then the split ripples, that was kind of like my Mulan part-ish, or like I intended it to be. And I guess the splitting reality into ripples was basically my way of describing how I sometimes overthink, but then when I overthink it, it doesn't make sense because it's not the entire picture.
That's really cool. And also, I don't know when this was, but I forgot to mention it earlier. Oh no, I did say this. But anyway, like the themes that we mentioned, like heaven and dead flowers, we use the same images, but in very different ways.
Yeah, that's really cool. Like, what a coincidence.
I mean, right? It's almost made me wonder, like, if we kept doing this, would our minds, like, keep syncing up? Would we keep having, like, the same images come out? Would we become the same person? What would happen?
That'd be a cool experiment-ish. I don't know about becoming the same person, but it'd be cool to see, like, if our minds eventually, like, if our writing styles too eventually sync up.
Yeah, because then we keep, you know, borrowing lines from each other and then sort of see how, like, I guess that develops. But anyway, I thought that was really cool. And I think the whole idea of this is really cool too, to like share your line with someone else and to take one of their lines and like see what you can do with it. And what was it like to start with the line that I wrote instead of something that you wrote?
Honestly, it was kind of hard because it's not normally a line I would write. Cause like, I mean, I don't know if this poem like fully reflects on my views. I made a purpose not to include the word, like, I guess I do use the word God, but like, I not like say, I'm not sure if I believe in God anymore. Cause I guess I didn't want to get into that with myself. Yeah, so I don't know if I believe in angels anymore kind of shaped the entire poem because it became kind of dark. And it was harder, I guess, but it was also easier because I already had an idea and I just had to follow my conscience on this one. After I got started, it was easy, but starting off was hard because I wasn't sure how I was going to make all three fit.
Yeah, I feel like it was really interesting to start with yours too, because I feel like it's sort of something I would, right? It's like along the lines of something I would do. And so then I just kind of wanted to do something about superstitions, and then that led me to like that Zuhitsu style. And then that was just what transformed the whole thing. So it was cool because I wanted to start with your line, and then eventually I was like, I'm going to stick it like right in the middle. I'm going to make that kind of like the centerpiece of it and then like work around it. So it was cool because it was nice to like have that sort of as my foundation. And I just mentioned this in a podcast episode, but I'm going to mention it again, is that, you know, those like cluster diagrams that you make in school where you have like one line, then you have all these different lines that come out.
Oh yeah. Like a bubble map.
Yeah. Whatever you call it, mind map or whatever. And so that's what this poem kind of was, where I started with that one line that you gave me. And then I had like all these other thoughts that came out of it. And so it was really cool to see that and like how it came to life.
Cool to see like what you did with my line, because I had no idea what you were going to do, because I guess these one-liners, they're one-liners because I tried to write to them, or maybe I was rushed and then I forgot what I wanted to write about, but I had only written this down. And I was like, I wonder where she's going to go with this. Like,
do you think it went in a weird direction?
No, I think it went really well, because I know I personally would never have thought of like connecting it to superstition, I don't think. So in that way, it was neat to see something that I created evolve in such a way that I would not have done it.
Yeah, I agree. That's the same way that I feel about what you wrote. It's like, I don't think I would have gone in that direction, but it's so cool to see it like in that way.
Yeah.
It's almost like seeing something that you wrote translated into a different language, you know, where like you understand it, but you don't completely understand it. And you're like, oh, I know that's mine, but I don't think it's completely mine. So it's really cool.
Yeah, I've never like tried to translate one of my poems, but it'd be like, I guess it'd be a neat thing to do, especially like translation poems, I guess, because I mean, there is the comparison because some things don't directly translate and whatnot.
Yeah, I used to, when I was taking French, like, I think it was last year, whenever I took French, I translated some of my poetry into French, like, very basic, because I was not very good at French, and I don't remember, like, any of it now, but it was interesting, because I felt like some of the words didn't quite match up, so I had to try to find, like, other words, and I was like, wait, there's no, like, equivalent to this, and, like, it means something different in the culture than it does in, like, our culture, so it's interesting. I think it'd be cool to translate writing.
Yeah, and especially if you have, like, another person translate it, and they interpret it a certain way, so they translate it a certain way. Like, I think, like, having someone translate your poem would be, like, giving away your creation to someone else. It's, like, a unique experience.
Mm-hmm. All right, so some more lines. I will forget, and I do not know yet how to forget gracefully. Inspiration for that?
Of the entire piece, that is the line that's truest to myself, because I forget so many things, and it's really bad. And my memories, like, even the ones I do have from when I'm younger, like, they're more splotches of, like, emotions or a phrase that really hit me a certain way, rather than, like, the entire situation, like, what we were arguing about or what I was excited about or stuff like that. I really worry about forgetting because I know I do have like Alzheimer's in my family, and my dad, he also has a terrible memory. So in that way, we kind of share in this fear. Yeah.
Yeah. I sometimes have that fear too. Like, what if I just like forget all these crazy things that have happened to me and like all my memories, and I'm just like, I don't remember these people I used to know, or I don't remember like these experiences I had, or like things I used to do with my family. But the one thing I learned that I can do to remember them is to write them down. So I've been trying to write down memories just like when they come to me, because sometimes I actually read about this and I don't know a lot about it right now. I'll come back to you when I have more information on it. But they're like these involuntary autobiographical memories, where basically you're just doing something random, then you have a memory from like however long ago it was. And so like I can just be cleaning my room, and then suddenly I have this memory from when I was like 3 doing something, or when I was 12 doing something. And there's like no correlation to what I'm doing and like what happened in the memory.
It's very poetic.
It's very funky. I'm going to write something about it. But anyway, it's really cool. And it's just like memory is so interesting and so weird, and like there's so much I want to learn about it.
Yeah, I think it's definitely what, I don't even like science all that much, but I was like, maybe psychology, because I mean, I think the way the brain works is just fascinating.
They do be interesting. It's like, what is going on in there? You're ending. I don't know if I believe in angels anymore, but when I become drunk on the night in absence of starlight, I really wish I did.
I guess, like, originally it was, the last one was, I don't know if I believe in angels anymore. And then I wanted it to end somewhat positive. So then I added the, when I become drunk. Actually, this was inspired by one of my friends, too, because I was doing a history project, and one of my best friends was in my group, and I was telling them, like, they were asking, like, what are you doing? And everyone else was like, I'm studying. And I was like, I'm trying to figure out what this poem means. I don't know what angels are in it. When I sent it to my mentor, she's like, I think, like, as usual, it's very, like, there's fantastic imagery, but what do angels represent in this poem? And I was like, I don't know. So I was trying to go back and dissect, like, what they were, and I did, like, a little research on, like, what do angels represent, like, angel quotes, etc. And then I guess just now I edited it and then added, because I don't know if I like being a skeptic anymore either. because I think that's kind of what this poem is kind of about. And in a way also went back to like the teenage defiance I mentioned after the brownie, because I think after doing that, it made it a lot more true to me rather than this thing that I was writing about that's super dark that my mom would be concerned about.
I think that's really cool that you were trying to like find meaning in it and like sort of explain it to yourself in a way. Very cool. I think that we did a really cool job this time. I had this like wacky idea. I was like, what if I made a podcast with someone who I interviewed before and we just like wrote poems and interviewed each other? And I was like, well, is that gonna work? And I was like, yes, it's gonna be so cool. And it was so much fun. I'm so glad that we've been able to talk. And also, I'm so grateful that I've been able to make over 30 episodes of Line Break. This is episode 30, part 2. I know, it's so crazy. The 1 year anniversary of Line Break is coming up. Line Break is turning 1. We're going to have a big photo shoot and a big birthday party celebration with balloons. You know, like when YouTubers reach like a million subscribers, they have like those big letter balloons and stuff where it's like 1M. And then you do one with a 1 for Line Break. it's been so cool. They've been able to talk to so many cool people. And to talk to you again after, like, first talking to you back in May, and, like, now we've changed so much as writers and stuff and people. So it's so cool that we've, like, been able to reconnect through our writing.
Yeah, for sure. One thing I've always admired about your writing, I think this hasn't changed as much, though your writing style has changed, is that I find your poems, like, really, they connect with me, maybe because they're, like, very teenager. Like, especially since a lot of them have to do with love, and it's like the idea of love, not exactly like love, because I mean, what teenager doesn't like think about that a little bit?
Oh, thank you so much. I know I've been writing about love a lot recently, but I think it's just kind of like me feeling like I'm, you know, almost 17. That's really old, and I haven't been in love, and I haven't been in a relationship yet, and I'm like, well, what does it mean to be in love, and like, what is love and stuff? So that's what's been inspiring a lot of my stuff recently, but it's definitely interesting. And I love your writing. I'm so excited when you like post new stuff. I'm like, oh, that's so cool.
I feel bad because I haven't posted in a while, because a lot of it are these like one-liner things I have, just because oftentimes inspiration will hit me during school and I'm like, no, I don't have time for this. I'm sorry. And I'll scribble down like a line that I came up with, instead of like a full-fledged poem that I can post, because I feel like posting one line would not be all that great.
I haven't been writing a whole ton lately. Sometimes I just get like these random bursts of inspiration. I wrote like 5 poems at once, but sometimes it takes me a little bit longer. But I'm starting school again in 2 days, so I'm sure I'll have a lot more to write about. I still haven't really written that much about last semester, but I have so many stories I need to write about, like so many just saved up in my mind. Like just wacky things that happened to me, like being in a group project and having one of the guy's brothers make a meme about it. Like just the whole thing is just so wacky. This podcast was so much fun to record. It was so cool to be on like the other side of the interview for once after like almost a year of making these, and then seeing like what it's like to actually be in that position was really fascinating.
Yeah, I was definitely trying to emulate you.
I'm so glad that you got into my persona. This has been episode 30, part 2 of Line Break. I hope you enjoyed and stay tuned for episode 31. Bye!